Welcome to Stuff You Should Know from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hey, and welcome to the podcast. I'm Josh Clark. There's Chuck Bryant.
Welcome yourself, buddy.
Welcome, Josh. Thank you, Chuck.
Sure.
That felt pretty good, actually.
Did it?
Just try it. Try it. Welcome yourself.
Welcome, Chuck.
How do you feel?
Relaxed.
Good. Good. Yeah, it has a nice effect.
It does.
You know what doesn't have a nice effect?
It depends on what you're talking about.
Okay, well, I'll just tell you.
Okay.
Spanish Fly. You remember last Friday? I was really nervous because I'd mail-ordered some Spanish Fly just in time for Valentine's Day, and right. It was like Friday the 13th. I'm like, there's no way it's going to come in time.
Right.
It did, and long story short, I went to the hospital with severe general irritation.
That's because you fell into the trap. Spanish Fly is not a good thing to pursue.
No, and it's like, you know, it's an aphrodisiac, and I'm thinking, you know, whatever. Whatever people think of when they order aphrodisiacs and pay a lot of money for them through
right.
the mail.
Right.
But it turns out, I did a little research on this after I was released from Grady. I found out that Spanish Fly is not even a fly. It's a type of beetle.
True.
And the active ingredient, it's actually crushed up, dried and crushed up beetles.
Powdered, correct?
Sure.
It's a powder.
And the reason they powder the beetles is because they're trying to get to this this acid that the beetle emits when it's scared.
Right.
When it's threatened. And this acid actually, you know, has long been thought to create amorousness in people.
But that's bunk, correct?
I can tell you the reason they thought they were aroused. They were actually confusing urogenital tract irritation. This stuff actually burns from the inside out.
Wow.
Yeah, and it can actually cause kidney damage and I think convulsions and death. So I kind of got off easy. Trip to the hospital on Valentine's Day, not very romantic.
Right.
But so I'm still alive.
No Spanish Fly. You should never take this for any reason.
No. So, of course, you know, as you know, I like to do lots of research. It's like my thing.
It is.
Right? I started researching aphrodisiacs in general.
True.
And here we are at this podcast.
Nice intro there.
Thank you.
I believe the word comes from the Greek goddess of love, Aphrodite. Is that right?
Yeah.
That's what I hear.
Sure.
And an aphrodisiac, by definition, is an element that evokes or stimulates sexual desire.
Yeah, we should probably make the distinction because I think a lot of people think aphrodisiacs are performance, sexual performance enhancing compound or whatever. Right,
right, not true at all. Like a Viagra would definitely not be considered an aphrodisiac.
No, no. So, nor would Spanish Fly, right?
Correct.
Well, let's talk about sexual arousal, Chuck.
Okay.
All right, let's just keep it cool, Chuck.
If I had a dime for every time you told me that, I wouldn't
keep
be doing
it cool
this
or let's talk about sexual arousal?
Keeping cool.
Oh, okay, gotcha. So medically speaking, sexual arousal begins when we take in something through one of our senses
right.
that we find sexually stimulating, right?
Yes.
And then all of a sudden, the limbic lobe kicks in.
Right, that's where it all starts.
This is part of the brain's reward center, and it's activated, and it says, hey, I'm sexually stimulated, so I'm going to send a neurological signal through the nervous system down to the blood vessels in the pelvic area.
Yeah.
And it says, open sesame, and the blood vessels open, and all this blood comes rushing in, and even better, because this wouldn't do a whole lot, the blood vessels close behind this influx of blood.
So the door shuts, essentially.
Yes.
Keeping the blood, well, not trapped, but...
Well, yeah, I say trapped is fine, sure.
Okay, I guess that just has a negative implication.
Right, well, whether it's trapped or not, what you got is an erect penis.
Right, and an erection in women as well.
Yeah, I was surprised to find this as well. The clitoris actually undergoes a very similar process. And there you have it. So all of a sudden, you are turned on and basically ready for sex. But yes. That's not it. There's other physiological responses going on when you're sexually aroused, right?
It's what I'm told. Can you fill me in on those?
I certainly can. Well, your heart rate increases.
Right.
And pleasure-producing chemicals like norepinephrine and dopamine are suddenly released into the brain, and it's go time.
That's right.
Yeah. So that's sexual arousal. And for an aphrodisiac to work, it would have to produce sexual arousal, right?
Right.
And it could do this in one of two ways.
Correct. Through the mind.
Like basically recreating that or stimulating that, right?
Absolutely. for instance, something that might increase blood flow to your sex organs, it might simulate feelings of intercourse. So that has the effect of creating desire.
Right, okay. Or it can also just go straight to the horse's mouth, right?
So to speak. Go ahead.
Well, it can create increased circulation or increased circulatory flow in the genitals. And
right. That's actually a chemical, physical reaction that takes place.
Right. The problem is as far as our beloved FDA.
Food and Drug Administration.
Sure. Yeah, thank you for that. I was trying to come up with a peanut butter salmonella joke, but couldn't.
Right.
Maybe too soon, actually.
Yeah.
They don't recognize any compound, any chemical at all as an aphrodisiac.
Right. I mean, they've done studies over the years, plenty of them, but they can't absolutely say with certainty that one thing is an aphrodisiac or not, because the libido is A, hard to define, and B, even harder to study.
Well, I was also interested to find out, we're not entirely certain how testosterone and estrogen factor into this. It turns out that, you know, we know that testosterone has an impact on sexual arousal, because men who have trouble getting sexual, or men who have low testosterone production have trouble getting sexually aroused. So we know it factors in.
Right.
We just don't quite know where.
Exactly.
And testosterone, you know, you usually associate estrogen with women, but testosterone has an effect on their sexual arousal as well. Women who participated in a 2000 study at the University of Utrecht, they gave them testosterone sublingually, and they found that genital arousal increased dramatically.
Really?
In women with low libido, yeah.
Interesting.
So they didn't report an increase in sexual arousal, but, you know, by extension, you could say, you know.
Right. Well, I do know that testosterone therapy is something that men undergo that have a low libido.
Yes.
Whether it's a cream or I think they have injections.
Or if they like to get in bar fights.
Right.
That's why they do that, too.
Yes, Josh.
Okay, so the FDA doesn't recognize anything, but there's still plenty of people out there who think certain foods, certain extracts, plants are aphrodisiacs. And this is nothing new. Like, some of these ideas go really far back.
How far back?
Well, it turns out that the Persians were fairly randy folks.
Okay.
And we're talking ancient Persia, I believe pre-Kama Sutra, which came out in, I don't know. I'm just going to go ahead and invite some viewer mail and say the 6th century A.D., right?
Okay, sure.
So the Persians were, they had one belief that honey was an aphrodisiac.
Yeah.
And apparently it has no active ingredient in it whatsoever that could produce an aphrodisiac effect.
Right.
But there is an interesting little tidbit in there, isn't there?
I think you're about the honeymoon?
Yes.
Yes, they would drink honey for a month after they got married, and that was called the honey month, which later became honeymoon. Is that right?
Yeah, and if you go by the lunar calendar, as the ancient Persians did, then a moon from full moon to full moon is a month. So, yeah, honeymoon. And even further back, I think.
Ancient Rome?
Yeah.
Well, that's not further back.
It's about the same time.
Yeah.
They were big into aphrodisiacs. I think one of their favorites was oysters, right?
Yeah, oysters usually tops a list when people are going to make a top 10 list of aphrodisiacs. People always put oysters at the top.
Sure.
And one of the reasons, there's a few reasons. One of the reasons is it's loaded with zinc. And zinc, if you don't have enough zinc as a man, then your sperm count and your fertility are affected.
Gotcha.
And it also has a bunch of iron, and an iron deficiency could lead you to be too tired, which doesn't usually lend itself to love making.
No.
As it were.
No.
And a final reason, and I think this might segue over to something else, is that a lot of aphrodisiacs are phalluses. That is, they resemble a sex organ.
Which one?
Well, an oyster has been said that it resembles the female sex organ.
Sure, yeah.
And I know another one on the list was avocados are supposedly an aphrodisiac.
This one's my favorite, yeah.
Because they, in fact, I think it's known as the testicle tree in ancient Rome because they resemble the man's testicles.
Aztecs. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, they grow in pairs and they're wrinkly. And that people considered avocados aphrodisiacs.
Right.
And that's a common theme, I know you know. It's something that just resembles a sex organ.
Sure.
You know, carrots.
Yeah.
Cucumbers.
Bananas.
Bananas. Figs. Figs are said to resemble the female genitalia.
Interesting.
So, yeah, all these things have long been considered across cultures sometimes to be aphrodisiacs.
Right. It's hard for me to think that our ancient brothers and sisters were very smart when you hear about things like this.
No, they were fairly superstitious folk, I think.
Yeah, I mean, it just sounds silly at this point. You know, avocados look like testicles, so if I eat them, that will make me virile.
Well, even more direct than that, like not they would also eat things that didn't just remind them of sex organs. They would actually eat sex organs of other animals.
Yeah, that's the one I was a little blown away by.
So, like, it makes you wonder, like, how many countless and usually it was an animal that was known for its prolific copulation, maybe.
Right.
Tiger. Virility or strength.
Sure.
So, yeah, it makes you wonder how many countless tiger and rabbit and bull penises were eaten over the years, you know?
Right.
And still it goes on today. There's actually, again, non-FDA-approved drugs outside of the U.S. that still grind up these things.
No.
I don't think anybody's dining on them any longer.
No.
But, yeah.
I know ginseng was one of your favorites, right?
Yeah. I guess we should say that there are some things out there that could conceivably be aphrodisiacs. They could produce sexual arousal, right?
Right. They actually affect you chemically, but
they
don't know if it's enough to actually. I think that's where the gray area is.
Exactly. Like, it's there, but could it really have any noticeable effect? And one of those is ginseng. And there was a study that they I don't remember who conducted it, but they tested men. They gave them ginseng, and then they tested them using the mean international index of erectile function, and it was shown to increase scores. So, enough said. Ginseng works.
There you have it.
Yeah.
It's a mood booster, too, right?
Yeah, I think it's an energy booster.
Well, yeah.
They have that ginseng up stuff.
Right.
Which is actually pretty tasty.
Is it?
Yeah.
A lot of the aphrodisiacs, they say it may not be a direct like chemical correlation to your pelvic region, but it'll do things like give you energy, and it's sort of A to B to C. If it gives you energy, then you're more likely to be aroused and in the mood for intercourse, whereas if something saps your energy, you're going to be, like if you eat a lasagna by yourself, it's probably not going to inspire you,
right?
To unless you're Henry VIII or something, I guess.
Right. Well, yeah, and you make a valid point. it's just that science hates it when you jump from A to C.
Exactly.
You know, even if there is a direct correlation or even causation, that they really like to get that B in place first. You know.
Right.
But yeah, so and ginseng's not the only one. There's other, like you said, oysters are full of zinc and iron and other stuff.
Yeah.
And chocolate, actually, which is always associated with love and romance.
Sure.
It actually has phenylethylamine and serotonin. So these things are actually in abundant supply, and we can ingest these things. Our body produces these naturally.
Right.
But we can ingest them and react to them, conceivably. It makes you wonder how much chocolate you'd have to eat to really get off, like perhaps like several goblets full?
Josh, I think you're talking about Montezuma, who was the Aztec ruler who reportedly would drink like 50 goblets of chocolate a day to increase his sexual desire.
I cannot believe he died from being murdered and beheaded.
Right,
rather
and
than,
not
you
from
know,
chocolate.
Exploding.
Right,
death by chocolate.
Ooh, jinx.
Nicely done, Chuck.
Should we talk about smell?
I think we should, because I got to tell you, if I put stock into any aphrodisiac, it would have to have something to do with smell.
Yeah, it's not always food, it's not always taste. I know they say that like music and exercise can be aphrodisiacs.
Sure. Well, yeah, I can tell you that swimming, just the release of endorphins actually is it definitely increases interest.
Interesting.
Yeah. Is that sterile enough of a word?
It is. Very, okay. Very well done there, Josh.
Thank you.
If we're talking smell, Dr. Alan Hirsch.
Of the Smell and Taste Treatment and Research Center in Chicago.
Yeah, that's a good center.
Yeah.
He did a study that looked at different smells, and as we were talking about the other day, you like to say he spent a career wafting smells under men's noses to see what stimulated them.
And measuring their penises.
That's right.
At the same time.
And he found some interesting things. Cheese pizza, for instance, increased blood flow to the penis by 5%. Buttered popcorn by 9%. And then the one that really shocked me, lavender and then pumpkin pie actually increased blood flow by 40%.
Which, that's pretty big.
Yeah.
You could overcome a lot of sluggishness with that much blood infusion.
Right, but that kind of, to me, in Thanksgiving, was when you eat pumpkin pie a lot of times. That flies right in the face of eating turkey and watching football and stuffing your belly.
You should come to Thanksgiving at my house.
Maybe I should.
It'll give you a whole different view of Thanksgiving.
Okay.
Yeah. And actually, pumpkin pie didn't just have an effect on men. Had a big effect on women.
Right.
But the topper, the biggest one, actually is a combination of scents that arouse women.
Yeah.
Is a combination of the horrid and disgusting black licorice flavored Good and Plenty candies mixed with cucumber smell.
Yeah.
It drives the women batty.
Right.
So long story short, I keep those things in my glove compartment.
You
at
have
all
a cucumber garden in your yard?
Yes. Actually, it's growing in my back seat.
Wow. I have nothing else to say.
I don't think there is anything else to say, but I do. Actually, I do have more to say.
Okay.
Let's hit pheromones up real quick.
Oh, yeah. You're all over this.
So pheromones basically have long been identified as like a way that maybe we attract one another.
Right.
Remember that awesome study you told me about? I can't remember what podcast it was, but they had women wearing shirts for like a week, and then they had guys smell the shirts.
Right, to determine their level of attraction by smell.
Right.
Yeah, and it was right on the money.
Yeah, well, if it was right on the money, then they really lucked out, because you need an extrasensory organ that not all of us humans have, a vomeronasal organ.
Never heard of it.
Okay, well, basically it's like a... It's like an addition to our olfactory nerve, our noses, basically.
Right.
And we can pick out packets of information from pheromones. I don't know if we can necessarily. That's never been proven. But in the animal kingdom, it's very prevalent. Pheromones are produced and emitted through urine, right?
Right.
So if your dog sprays somewhere and then another dog comes along and just can't stop sniffing.
Oh, yeah.
What that other dog's doing is actually determining the health of the urinating dog's immune system.
Really?
And also determining if it would be a good match to produce offspring, because apparently, ultimately, what you want when you mate with another person, as far as animalistically speaking,
right?
You are looking for somebody with a compatible but opposite immune system,
right?
So that the offspring you produce has the resistance to the most diseases possible.
Well, and the same in humans. That's what the original smell study from the other podcast
was
about.
Right. But yeah, the problem is not all of us have that vomeronasal organ. But there was a study that we emit pheromones in our sweat, by the way, not our urine, which is good for us.
Yeah,
wow. Yeah. We'd have a different society if that were the case. Huh?
I think so, yeah.
Well, there was a study. It was a kind of an informal study. These guys sprayed pheromones on one member of a set of twin girls and popped the two of them side by side at a bar on a Saturday night.
Right.
And waited to see if there was a difference in which one was hit on more. The one that got the boost of pheromones was picked up three times more than her identical yet untreated twin sister.
So the girl that was laced with pheromones.
Mm-hmm.
Very cool.
Yeah. So pheromones, aphrodisiacs. I feel like I've gotten a lot off my chest.
Right. I know a lot of people believe in aphrodisiacs, but the scientific community... The FDA, as you said, does not support it, and the scientific community thinks there's also a likelihood that it just could be a placebo. If you think you eat an oyster and you're going to feel a little more inspired sexually, then you're going to eat the oyster and feel inspired.
And hey, you know what? If you're just fooling yourself, whatever. Sure. I'd say the end justifies the means in that case.
Placebos work.
Yeah. Well, good. So, Chuck, thanks for doing that with me. I think it's listener mail time.
Hold your horses, Josh.
Oh, okay.
Well, it's not quite time yet.
All
we
right.
have to give a little shout out to our blog.
Mm-hmm.
We have a new blog on the website, as you know, howstuffworks.com. And our blog is called Stuff You Should Know.
Appropriately enough.
And you and I each post once a day. We try and scour the news world for interesting tidbits
yeah.
that aren't quite up to par for an entire show episode. And we want to get fans interacting and kind of chatting about these things.
Yeah, you can access that through the homepage at howstuffworks.com, right?
Yeah, leave comments.
And anybody who wants to see Chuck in his famous cool guy flat cap, there is a fine, fine photograph of him.
Right, we have pictures.
On every post, actually.
And yours as well.
Thank you, Chuck.
That's a good photo of you.
Yeah, well, thanks a lot. I appreciate it.
So,
it's better than the goofy one that was originally.
Right.
Woof. So now, okay, now is it listener mail time?
Yes, let's get on with it. Josh, I think we are going to pull the train into Limerick Junction.
Yeah, I like this trend. We went from haikus to limericks. I don't know what's next.
I don't know, an epic poem maybe? No.
Yeah.
We're going to get the Iliad from some listener now. Just a couple of limericks here. Ryan of Victoria, British Columbia. Fine Canadian friend.
Have you ever been there?
No.
That's one of my favorite cities on the planet.
I've heard it's awesome.
It is awesome. It's very cool. Everybody's very friendly. It's like a tiny city with like mini skyscrapers and everything, and it's just awesome. It's British Columbia too, so.
Sure, nice. All right. Ryan has this to say. As I wore an uncomfortable sweater, I sat down and wrote you this letter. Josh and Chuck love haikus, but haikus make me snooze because we all know that limericks are better.
Yes.
That's a good one, Ryan.
Fantastic.
And the final limerick today is from Brendan Franklin of Tucson, Arizona, another cool town.
Yeah.
College town. The podcasting host, Josh and Chuck, and the cast that they host sure don't suck. They tell me how stuff works, and as one of the perks, I'm no longer an ignorant schmuck.
Nice.
And Brendan, we agree. You're not an ignorant schmuck. You're a good guy.
You also may be the first person on the planet to ever use schmuck in a limerick.
Oh, no way.
No, okay.
It's huge in limerick land.
Is it? I'm not very familiar with them.
Oh, yeah.
I guess I should say I'm surprised that we haven't gotten any dirty limericks yet, though. Although now I think we could probably expect that.
True. Yeah. I'm just happy my name rhymes with schmuck.
Yeah. Well, we knew that already.
Yes.
So if you want to send Chuck and I a limerick, not a haiku, or if you just want to say hi, or if you'd like to just congratulate us on making it through how aphrodisiacs work without humiliating ourselves by cracking up, you can send us an email to stuffpodcast@howstuffworks.com.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit howstuffworks.com.